It's 1 o'clock. You're listening to This Week on RTE Radio 1 with Gavin Jennings. On today's programme, swing states, tech bros and vibes, electioneering in the USA as Democrats convene in Chicago. A September deadline to choose candidates for an election here. Also, war in Russia, raising the bar on low pay, vetting in the USA and using artificial intelligence to find a job and a worker. That's all coming up after the news, read now by Karen Creed.
An Garda Síochána have said they deem the overall national threat level to be moderate, meaning that a terrorist attack is possible but not likely. Speaking to reporters in County Carlow this morning, the Taoiseach Simon Harris addressed the issue of national security.
Ireland is not in any manner or means immune from the threats that we see in other countries, and we should never think that we are. We're not immune from the threat of terrorism, be that domestic or international. But I am confident that the Gardaí take these matters very seriously. I am conscious that the laws of our land are robust, and of course enforcing those laws is important.
Houses in Newton Ards in County Down have been evacuated of several hundred people after the discovery of a large unexploded World War II bomb. Around 450 residents in the Movilla Road area of the town were told to leave their homes by 10 o'clock this morning before British Army bomb experts moved in to deal with the device. Our Northern editor Vincent Kearney reports.
Workmen discovered what's believed to be a large unexploded German bomb when preparing the ground for a new phase of building in the Rivenwood housing development in Newton Ards on Friday. Around 450 residents were issued with leaflets from the PSNI asking them to vacate the area from 10 o'clock this morning. Homes and businesses within a quarter of a mile radius are being evacuated. Bomb disposal experts are on site and residents have been advised it could take 5 or more days to deal with the device. A large police cordon has been put in place and a local leisure centre has opened to provide accommodation if any residents need it. Vincent Kearney, RT News, County Down.
The US Secretary of State Antony Blinken is due to arrive in Israel as mediators seek to cement a ceasefire deal between Israel and Hamas. It will be Mr. Blinken's 9th trip to the Middle East since the attack by Hamas gunmen on southern Israel last October and the ensuing invasion of Gaza by the Israeli military. US, Qatari and Egyptian mediators have said negotiations to strike an agreement are making progress. Noah Al-Thani is a former member of Qatar's Defence Intelligence Operations and a member of the ruling family in Doha, which hosted the talks last week. He said parties to the negotiations would not get everything they wanted.
As long as both parties agree to a ceasefire, humanitarian aid and release of hostages, that could be a basis where then the mediators could work with the negotiating parties for a lasting ceasefire and then hopefully a lasting peace.
PSNI officers have apprehended a convicted murderer who had escaped 2 days ago. 54-year-old Daniel McCord was taken back into custody in the Belfast area following police appeals to trace his whereabouts and he has been returned to prison. Two men are being questioned by Gardaí in connection with a double stabbing during a family dispute at a farm near Dunmanway in County Cork. Two men in their 30s were seriously wounded during the altercation that broke out at around 7 o'clock yesterday evening at the farm on the outskirts of the town. One of the men was airlifted to hospital. Both men are said to be in a serious but stable condition. A man in his 70s and a man in his 30s have been arrested. And now the weather forecast.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Grant. For reliable, efficient and affordable home heating solutions, trust Grant to heat your home. Think heating, think Grant. Visit grant.ie.
It'll be dry across much of the country today, apart from isolated light showers. There will be sunny spells throughout the afternoon and highest temperatures will range from 15 to 21 degrees. There is a warning that south or southeast winds will reach gale force 8 for a time tomorrow morning on coastal waters from Roaches Point to Mizzenhead to Valentia. Gavin.
Karen, thank you. This week, Democrats gather in Chicago to formally choose Kamala Harris to take on Donald Trump in November's election to be the next president of the United States. It's a month since he was wounded in an assassination attempt at a rally in Pennsylvania and emerged as the raging hot favorite to beat the current president, Joe Biden, in the race to the White House. But that was July. Joe Biden is set to address this week's convention in Chicago, but to endorse his vice president as his successor. His predecessor was back in Pennsylvania last night. His prepared speech for a large crowd was supposed to focus on economic issues, but he went off script and on the attack.
Think of this. Who would believe this? 80 days from now, we are going to defeat a communist known as Kamala Harris. She's a communist. Most radical left person ever to run for office. This is not what this country needs. People say, be nice. Have you heard her laugh? That is the laugh of a crazy person. That is the laugh of a crazy. It's the laugh of a lunatic. They prohibited her from laughing. I've been waiting for her to laugh, because as soon as she laughs, the election's over. I heard the other day, and this isn't anything, I'm just saying, they'll say he was rambling. I don't ramble. I'm really smart guy, really smart. I don't ramble. But the other day, anytime I hit too hard, they say he was rambling. Rambling.
Let's cross live to the United States and our Washington correspondent, Sean Whelan. Morning, Sean.
Hello, Gavin. How are you?
Not rambling, Sean, then. What is Donald Trump doing?
Good question. He has an open goal there on the issue of inflation, on the cost of living issues, the bread and butter issues that face ordinary Americans every day of the week. And you would think in any normal election, when you get that opportunity, you just stick the ball in the back of the net. And yet he doesn't. He, to use a football metaphor, instead of sticking it in the back of the net, he goes dribbling around the field, rambling, if you like, and not sticking it in the back of the net. That should have been a clear-cut opportunity in Pennsylvania last night to do exactly that and push home this issue that there's huge cost of living increase in this country over the last 3.5 years, when Kamala Harris has been part of the administration, the ruling administration here, and basically blame her for all of it. And yet he failed to do that decisively. It was the same in his Bedminster estate on Thursday when he held a press conference specifically on the issue of inflation and cost of living, surrounded by packets of cereal and coffee and other groceries. That was all it was about. And yet that message was completely lost because, again, he rambled on for 2 hours. His introductory remarks took an hour. And his message was just lost. Whatever it was completely lost. And it's that lack of focus that is undermining his message, when really Kamala Harris should be vulnerable on this issue and he should be driving it home and gaining in the opinion polls, because inflation here is dreadful and cost of living issues really are important for ordinary electors.
What is he rambling about?
Everything you can think of, from his relationship with President Xi of China to the North Korean regime, Putin, Israel, Venezuela, oil, the environment, electric cars, you name it, anything, almost except inflation. He does talk about inflation as well. I mean, he says it's all the fault of Biden and Harris's administration, and he's been notably tacking to the Harris part of that, not so much the Biden part of it, obviously, since the candidacy has changed. So he does mention it, but it's just one of a very long shopping list of issues. And it's the same shopping list of issues that he's been on about for the past year, 2 years, 8 years, some would say.
Does he have a clear plan for how to deal with the economic problems facing the United States? Those cost of living issues, which we've heard you speaking about before, the fact that groceries are almost extortionate now in many US stores.
Yeah, it's 26% increase in 3 years. That is really, really tough on people. If Trump has a plan for dealing with that, he's doing a great job in keeping it concealed from the enemy, i.e. everybody else. The most we can discern from it is that he says he will order all of his government ministers, the secretaries of state, on day one to focus on pushing down the cost of living. Doesn't say how. The only other issue that he's mentioned specifically when he's been asked about it, he says we are going to drill, baby, drill, to use his phrase, to open up oil exploration across the continental United States, in particular in Alaska, because he believes that will reduce the cost of energy. And if you reduce the cost of energy, you will reduce the cost of pretty much everything to all consumers. But that's going to take a long time, if it indeed happens at all. And his other plan related to cost of living is to put tariffs on all foreign goods, particularly heavy tariffs on Chinese goods coming in, but on all goods. And that's something that perhaps ought to be of concern to the Irish manufacturing and exporting sectors, a 10% tariff on those. Pretty much every economist here thinks that plan would actually drive up the cost of living, particularly for lower income families who depend on cheap goods from China, for example. If those costs are forced up by government action, then it would cost them more money. So, yeah, Trump has some kind of a plan to intervene into the economy, but it's kind of hazy and it's not very well joined up and not very well thought out. Harris also has a plan to intervene into the economy that's more sharply defined.
Yes, Kamala Harris and her VP pick, Tim Walz, they've taken a different approach in the campaign so far, it seems. They released a video on Friday with the two of them sitting down in a Detroit restaurant, having a chat about food, music and their backgrounds. Let's hear some of it.
Interesting, two different parts of the country, two different lived experiences, but all coming to that same goal of everybody getting a fair shot.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, Tim, even though you and I grew up in different parts of the country, you remind me of the people I grew up with. Hardworking folks, plain speaking.
Yeah.
People who know the difference between right and wrong.
Yep.
And care, love thy neighbor in the most authentic and true way.
Yeah.
Those are the folks I grew up with, and I know that's who you are. And I'm so glad we're doing this together.
Well, I'm proud to be with you.
Is this working, Sean?
Well, it's a slow burner, but it speaks, I think, to the type of campaign they're trying to run, which is to set a feel-good, relatable mode or tone to their campaigning. In contrast, trying to draw a contrast with the Trump style, which is very attack-oriented. He comes out talking about crazy people, crazy Kamala, crazy Nancy Pelosi, calling her a communist, calling her policies Venezuela-type socialism or communism. It's quite harsh. It's quite hard in tone. He talks about America being a failing state, a failing country. This warmer, more human-focused way of introducing Walz and Harris to the electorate is their attempt to go in the opposite direction there. I think as a piece of political communication, it's quite fascinating. And any spin doctors or people who are interested in political communication back in Ireland should give that video on YouTube a bit of a look, because it does, I think, strike a different way of campaigning to try and introduce the candidates, not through their policy issues, although they do move on to that in the end. But it starts off as just a nice, warm feeling chat between two people that you might be able to relate to. And by the end of it, they're slyly slipping in a few of their policy ideas in there as well. It's quite an interesting way of doing it. Is it working? Bit early to tell. They say about opinion polls in this country, they don't get serious until after Labor Day. And Labor Day this year falls on the 2nd of September, Monday the 2nd. So you're a fortnight away from what most of the Americans would consider the hardcore serious polls, when people start to really focus on the election campaign. But nevertheless, you are seeing forward momentum on the Harris-Walz ticket.
We'll talk about polls a little bit later, and we'll also speak to Scott Lucas shortly, Professor of American Studies at the Clinton Institute in UCD. He's joining us from the United States. But let's hear a little of Kamala Harris campaigning, and by way of comparing it with what we heard from Donald Trump earlier. Here she is in Arizona earlier.
To make your voices heard. Do we believe in freedom? Do we believe in opportunity? Do we believe in the promise of America? And are we ready to fight for it? And when we fight, we win.
Professor Scott Lucas, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us today.
Real pleasure to be here. Thank you, Sean.
That's very vibey, very positive. Doesn't say very much, does it?
Well, you know, American politics thrives on spectacle. I'm sure your listeners know that. And what the American media are calling the vibe has been especially important for Harris, given the circumstances in which Joe Biden was pulling the Democratic Party's chances down. And so you spend the first few weeks after replacing Biden with Harris and Walz giving that idea of, yes, there is something positive here. It's not just simply the doom and gloom either of a Biden candidacy or of Donald Trump with his latest dystopian fantasy and insult politics. And then you get to the policies, which is what Sean Whelan was talking about, which is in the past few days, alongside clips like that that you've heard, Kamala Harris has made a major speech starting to lay out, not in detail, but laying out generally what type of policies you do take in terms of food, in terms of healthcare, education, housing, those areas where you have had problems with price increases. You do take the front foot on immigration, which is another issue that the Trump campaign should be trying to press, but are not. And then you play to your strengths with issues such as reproductive rights for women, the environment, and just the general idea of we need a safer, more secure American democracy. So you combine the spectacle, you combine the feel good with a little bit more of the detail of this is what you can expect with the Harris presidency.
She's yet to be challenged yet, though.
Well, when you say she's yet to be challenged, that's going to be the vibe that the Trump campaign, who are scrambling to land a punch, is saying, oh, well, she hasn't sat down for a one-on-one with anybody. You know, Trump has sat down with reporters in the last couple of weeks. And in fact, those have turned into fairly disastrous encounters for him because he hasn't been able to get to a message. What Travis and Waltz are doing is, look, we're going to put our message out at these rallies. We're going to put it out where you get these 15,000 people who are very enthusiastic. And by doing that, you're controlling the narrative. You know, when was the last time that Donald Trump seized the headlines as he used to do with just a single tweet on Truth Social? Now, reporters are going to be a little bit frustrated. They would love to get one-on-one interviews with Harris. I think that will happen at some point. But right now, the Democratic playbook is you ride this momentum into the Democratic convention, which starts on Monday, and then you ride it after the convention into that first debate with Trump on September 10th.
Is there any prospect of her being challenged by protesters, particularly on her stance on Gaza, at the convention this week?
Yeah, there will be. There will be protests in Chicago. And the Democrats, I think, initially were worried about this because, you know, listeners of yours with a long memory will remember that, you know, the horrible year of 1968, it's horrible for America in general, but it was horrible for the Democrats when they had their convention in Chicago when it fell into disarray. But I think a lot of that worry about that eased for two reasons. I think the first is specifically they were worried about the swing state of Michigan and where there's a large Arab American population and that the Israel mass killings in Gaza could hurt them there. But in fact, Harris has actually taken the lead in Michigan. She's up by about 4 percentage points despite that issue. And secondly, more generally, whereas Sean Whelan makes a good point that U.S. polls traditionally don't really come into play until after Labor Day, well, we're beyond that. We're in this new era of American politics. And in the last 2 weekends, Harris and Waltz have not only taken the lead in those key states of Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. Harris is now ahead in other states such as Arizona. She's running neck and neck in Georgia and Nevada and even North Carolina. So the Trump net folks now are on the defense, even in states that they thought they would win this year.
Sean, that point Scott Lucas is making about those New York Times, Siena College swing state polls, which we've heard about in the last few days, which do seem to be showing a change of momentum in the states that are really going to choose the president.
Yes, they do, although that change of momentum is still a bit recent. It would give you more comfort to see a longer run of polls coming through on that. Similar to the national averaging polls, and also just one poll, however good Times Siena is, again, I'd have more comfort around seeing an average or an aggregate of polls to see how they're doing. And I think that's going to take a little bit more data points before we start to get a bit more confidence around it. But there's no doubt that Harris has been closing the gap on Trump and perhaps even edging ahead, as the 538 polling average is suggesting, giving her about 2.5 percentage points gap ahead of Trump nationally. But, you know, that's a pretty small lead. And also it is those swing states, that half dozen or so battleground states, that are going to determine this election. And particularly critically, places like Pennsylvania, where it's looking very tight, even in the Times Siena poll, it's 1 point between the two of them. So what's happened is, yes, there has been this big surge towards the Harris-Waltz ticket, but it's coming from a very low base. Joe Biden was so underwater a month ago when she took over that really the only way was up. So she's now pulled up onto level pegging with Trump at the start line. When the firing gun gets fired, after Labor Day, effectively, and the race really, really, really starts. I mean, next week she is going to get another polling bounce coming out of that Democratic convention, all things being even. So she will start to pull ahead again in the polling. It's then up to Trump to see if he can pull it back again as the campaign unfolds in September. And I think the date to watch out for there is going to be the 10th of September, that presidential debate hosted by ABC in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, that key state in this election.
Scott Lucas, before we let you go, the vice presidential debate will be after the presidential one. Any sense of buyer's remorse on the part of Republicans at this stage?
I think there is, but it's coming out through leaks to the media. And I think the most important buyer's remorse is what you referred to earlier with Sean, which is they cannot get Trump on message. At the start of this month, they brought in outside advisors like Kellyanne Conway, who, of course, was very instrumental not only in Trump's 2016 run, but then in his White House. And they told Trump, and donors told Trump, stick to the policies, get after Harris and Waltz, particularly on the economy and immigration, pull back on the personal attacks. As you played that clip at the start of this package, he has done exactly the opposite. So I think the buyer's remorse right now is not really about J.D. Vance, where we thought, you know, maybe he would pull down the ticket. I think the buyer's remorse is we might be stuck with Trump, who will not change. I agree with Sean. This is a toss-up election. And anybody who is betting on the outcome right now, I'll take their money. But I do think that if you cannot get Trump onto issues rather than this sort of dystopian spectacle of communists running America, which most independent voters, the key voters, don't believe, then I would rather be in the Democratic camp than the Republican one right now.
Scott Lucas and Sean Whelan in the United States this lunchtime. Thank you.